You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Connection Between the Living and the Dead, Collected Works, Volume 168, translated by Aria Jackson. This is Lecture 7 of 8 lectures, entitled The Connection Between the Living and the Dead, given in Bern on November 9th, 1916. The goal of our spiritual scientific efforts is to form ideas of how we, as human beings, can live together with spiritual worlds in a way similar to the way we relate to the physical world through our physical body, with experiences and perceptions. Through our observations, we are already able to take up knowledge that has come before our souls over the years. We know that the world that lies just behind the world of our sensory perceptions is the elemental world. Our impetus to will, conveyed through the physical body, and our actions in the physical world, are directed to this elemental world. We could also give it a different name. We receive clear ideas from these supra-sensible worlds only when we get a little bit involved with their characteristics, when we try to know what they mean for us as human beings. Our entire life between birth and death, and also the life that then proceeds between death and rebirth, depends on our connection with these various worlds spreading out around us. For us, the elemental world should be the world that can be perceived through what we call imaginations. Thus we may also call this elemental world the imaginal world. For ordinary human life, under normal circumstances, human beings cannot bring the imaginal perceptions from the elemental world to consciousness. It does not mean that these imaginations are not there, or that we do not have a connection with the elemental world and receive imaginations from it at any moment of our sleeping or waking life. These imaginations flood continually through us, unnoticed. And just as when we open our eyes or ears to the outside world, we have sensations of color and light and perceptions of sound, so too we have continuous impressions of the elemental world, which cause imaginations in the etheric body. These imaginations differ from ordinary thinking, in that with ordinary everyday human thinking, only the human head is involved as an instrument that processes and experiences. Whereas with imaginations, on the other hand, almost our entire organism is involved, but especially the etheric organism. These imaginations, we could call them unconscious, are continuously running through our etheric organism, and they become conscious only with trained esoteric perception. Even though these imaginations do not directly and immediately enter our consciousness in daily life, they are not without significance to us. They are actually much more important in our entire life than sensory perceptions, because we are much more intensively, much more intimately connected to our imaginations than to sensory perceptions. We do not receive many imaginations from the mineral kingdom. We receive more imaginations from what we develop in our coexistence with the plant world and the animal world. But, by far, the greatest part of what lives in our etheric body as imaginations comes from our relationships with our fellow humans and from everything that results in our life from these relationships. Indeed, our whole relationship to our fellow humans and the way we stand by them is basically founded on the imaginations that are always a result of the way we encounter another person. These do not assert themselves, however, as imaginations to ordinary consciousness, as I already pointed out. Rather, they assert themselves in the sympathies and antipathies that play such an extensive role in our lives. We develop these sympathies and antipathies to a lesser or greater degree, to what is close to us as human beings in the world. In indefinite feelings, in inclinations or disinclinations only hinted at, in all that develops into friendship, into love that grows in such a way that we believe we cannot live at all without this or that person. All of this is based on the imaginations that are continually brought up in our etheric body through living with our fellow human beings. And we always carry in our life something that cannot exactly be called memory, because it is something much more real than memory. We carry within us these, let us say, heightened memories, these imaginations that we have received from all of the impressions of the people we have been with, and that we receive continuously. We carry them all in us, and they basically form a major part of what we call our inner life. Not the inner life that remains as clear memory, but the inner life that asserts itself in a general feeling, a general mood, a general view of the world and of our coexistence with the world. We could only pass coldly by what is in our world if we did not develop an imaginative life in togetherness with other beings, that is, with other people. What we call the interest of our soul in our surroundings is something that asserts itself, and that we must particularly heed as especially belonging to the elemental world and our etheric life. What is advantageously present in the powers of our etheric body asserts itself when we are immediately captivated, in certain cases, by an interest in another person. Such an interest, in the way it develops between one person and another, is based on very specific relationships that appear between the etheric of one person and the etheric of the other, and that cause the playing back and forth of imaginations. We live with this imagination and these interests, their effects, their strength, and so on, we are often not able to account for, or are able to account for only vaguely, which we do not notice at all because our life is not ordinarily inspired, but rather proceeds in a more or less dull manner. We are part of the elemental world with all these things. We are part of this elemental world in such a way that we truly have our own etheric body from this world, which is the instrument for relating with this elemental world. Through our etheric body, we are developing relationships not only with other etheric bodies that are part of other physical beings, but through our etheric body, we are related also to spiritual beings of an elemental nature, and specifically to those that can arouse imagination, unconscious or conscious, for us human beings. People differ from one another by their relationships, one with certain elemental entities, another with other elemental entities. This can also happen in such a way that, for example, a person's relationships to certain elemental entities can coincide with the relationships of another person to the same elemental entities. But we must hold fast to the fact that whereas we always have a relationship to a certain extent with a great number of elemental entities, each of us has a particularly strong relationship to an elemental entity that is more or less the counter-image of our own etheric body. One could say that our own etheric body has an intimate relationship with a certain etheric being. Just as our etheric body, what we call our etheric body from birth until death, by being integrated into the physical body, develops its own relationship to the physical world, so this etheric being, which is in a way the counter-image, the opposite pole of our own etheric body, conveys our connections to the entire elemental world, to the surrounding cosmic elemental world. Thus we see an elemental world that we ourselves are part of through our etheric body, with which we relate to, and have concrete connections to specific elemental entities. Within this elemental world, we come to know entities that are actually just as real as people and animals are here in the physical world, but which have not reached physical incarnation. Rather, they have reached only the etheric state, and their closest corporeality is in fact etheric corporeality. Just as we move among physical people here, so too do we continuously move among such elemental entities. Some are not connected to us, but have connections to other people instead. But a certain number are particularly close to us, and are related to us in the most intimate way, and mediate our contact with the cosmic elemental world. We ourselves are beings such as these elemental entities right after we go through death's gate, when we still carry our etheric body with us for a few days. We ourselves have become such an elemental being to a certain extent. Now and then I have described this process of going through the gate of death. The more specifically we examine this process, the more specific the imaginations it produces, because the impressions we receive immediately after passing through the gate of death live in imaginations, assert themselves as imaginations. Now, more specifically, it turns out that a certain interaction occurs immediately after death between our etheric body and its etheric counter-image. The fact that our etheric body is taken from us some days after death is based mainly on the fact that our etheric body is to some extent attracted and absorbed by its etheric counter-image, and then becomes one with it, so that we in fact lay aside our etheric body some days after death, consign it, so to speak, to our etheric counter-image. When our etheric body is taken from us by our cosmic image, quite particular relationships come about from what is taken from us in this way, and the other elemental entities with which we have had relationships in life. What comes about is an interaction between what our etheric body has become, together with its counter-image, and the other elemental entities that accompanied us from birth until death. A kind of interplay that could be compared to the one between a sun and its planetary system. Our etheric body creates a sort of sun, so to speak, with its cosmic counter-image, and the other elemental entities surround this sun like a sort of planetary system. And when this interplay takes place, the forces are created that add what our etheric body can bring to the elemental world in the correct way, through a gradual becoming. This process, which we usually label with the abstract word dissolving, is fundamentally the effect of the forces that arise from this sun-planetary system we leave behind. What we have achieved for our etheric body, what we have acquired for this etheric body in the course of our earthly life, gradually becomes part of the spiritual world, weaving itself into the forces of the spiritual world. And we must be completely clear that every thought, every idea, every feeling that we have on earth, even though they remain hidden, are important to the spiritual world. They will go with our etheric body and become elements of this spiritual world when the coherence of our etheric body is torn apart upon passing through the threshold of death. We do not live in vain. The fruits of our life and how we integrate them into the thoughts we acquire and the feelings we experience are assimilated into the cosmos. This truth is something we must take into our feeling, into our perceiving, if we want to conduct ourselves correctly in the spiritual scientific movement. One is not a spiritual scientist by simply knowing about certain things, but rather by feeling into the spiritual world through insight, by feeling oneself to be an element of the spiritual world in a very specific way, by knowing that what you now cultivate as thought has meaning for the whole universe, because it will be given over in its corresponding form to the universe upon your death. We can interact in one way or another, as I have described, with what is committed to the universe after a person's death, and some of the ways in which the dead are present to those left behind in earth life is due to the fact that the etheric individualities who are now actually isolated from their true human identities, send their imaginations back to the living. If the living are sensitive enough, or are in some extraordinary state, or have prepared themselves in a normal way through appropriate spiritual training, then the effects of what is given to the spiritual world by the dead can also arise for the living in a conscious way, as the effects of an imaginal nature. A connection remains after death, however, between what is the actual human individuality and the etheric aspect from which it has just separated, a connection that is an actual interaction. This can be seen most clearly by the fact that through spiritual training one can have real contact with one and another person who has died. A certain kind of communication may then take place. The dead person conveys to his etheric body what he himself wished to transmit to us while we are still here in the physical world. For only by transmitting it to the etheric body, inscribing it, so to speak, into the etheric body, only by this means can we who are here in the physical have perceptions of the dead in terms of what we call imaginations. As soon as we really have imaginations of the dead person, the etheric body of the one who has died acts as the, quote, changeover switch, close quote, if you will allow me to use this simplistic, much too mechanical expression, close parenthesis. One must not think, however, that we thus will have less warm-hearted relations with the dead, because a switch must be present. Just as those who we encounter in the outer world let their character be conveyed through their physical image, which is called up in us through our own eyes, so too the conveyance through the etheric body is something very similar. We see what the dead person wishes to have approach us by receiving it along the roundabout way through their etheric body. This etheric body is outside of them, but they have a deep connection to it in such a way that they can inscribe what lives within them into this etheric body, and we can read it there as imagination. Of course, if someone who is spiritually trained wishes to come into contact with the dead through their etheric body in this way, that means that connections have been established either in the last life between birth and death or in previous incarnations. These connections have moved the soul of the person still living here on earth to the point that his imagination can make an impression on him or her. And that can happen only if a direct soul interest was present in a very specific, intensive way for the dead themselves. Soul interest, whether it is noticed or not, must be the mediator between the living and the dead if contact is to take place. We will discuss the latter instance in a moment. The soul interest must be such that we truly carry something of the dead within us, so to speak, that the dead constituted at least a part of our own experience. Only when we train spiritually can we create a substitute for this, for example, by letting the handwriting or something else in which the individuality of the dead lives affect us. This seems external at first, but it can be transformed into something more internal through spiritual training. And it will be possible, to the extent that we have acquired a practice of coming into relationship with the individuality, and to the extent this individuality has put himself or herself into the handwriting, has settled into the handwriting, or we must have the opportunity to engage ourselves with active interest with the feelings of the physical survivors, take part in their pain and in the whole interest that they have in the dead. By taking these up into ourselves with our interest, we can make our own souls ready to read into the imagination I have spoken of, the concrete feelings from the dead that are flowing over and living within their dear family members. Now we must be clear that noticing this imagination, which flows from the etheric body, depends to a certain extent on spiritual training or on specific relationships. and that just because people do not notice it does not mean that it is any less present. We can say that people living here in the physical world are not only surrounded by elemental forces in the form of imaginations, which originate from the physical body of a living person, but that our etheric body is also continuously filled with imaginations that we take into ourselves, even if we do not notice it, which originate from those who have some kind of connection to us and who have passed through death's gate before we have. We can say that just as we have a connection with the air around us as physical bodies in physical life, so are we in relationship to the entire elemental world of the dead. We do not get to know our human life if we do not gain knowledge of these relationships. These relationships are, however, of such a subtle kind that they can go completely unnoticed by most people. But who would deny the fact that people do not always remain exactly the same between birth and death? If we take just one look back at our life, we will notice that we have gone different directions at different times in our life. Even if we imagine our life has taken such a seemingly consistent course, numerous events have occurred. Although these events may not exactly have led our lives in very different directions, which could also have been the case at times, they still have enhanced our lives through joy or suffering, in one way or another, and brought us into other relationships, in one way or another. We know that when we go to a new place, we can have a different sense of well-being, even from the different composition of the air. These differing soul moods that we move through in the course of our lives originate from the influences of the elemental world. And they come in no small part from the influences that come from those dead with whom we previously had a relationship on earth. If someone meets a friend or someone else in life with whom a relationship is formed, for whom a favor must be done, or perhaps also some reproof or criticism given, this is due to the influence of certain forces. Whoever recognizes the occult order in the world knows that when two people are brought together to perform a task, sometimes one and sometimes several of those who passed through death's gate earlier were involved with this coming together. Our life does not become less free as a result. No one who does not want to look foolish would say, quote, "How can people be free when they have to eat?" Close quote. It is just as incorrect to say that we become less free when our souls continually receive effects from the elemental world in the way described. But truly, just as we are connected to warmth and cold, to what becomes our food, to the air around us, so too are we connected to the elemental world, but primarily with what comes to us from those who died before us. We can truly say that human beings' effects on their fellow humans do not stop when they pass through death's gate. Through their etheric body, with which they themselves remain connected, they send their imaginations to those with whom they had a connection. Indeed, this world that we are speaking of, though it remains unnoticed in daily life for good reason, is a much more real one for our human life than the one we usually call real. So much for this elemental world today. Another kingdom that is continuously around us, and to which we also belong, as we do the elemental world, can be called the soul world. The name does not matter. We are always connected to the elemental world in a waking state. When we are sleeping, when the eye and astral body are outside the physical and etheric body, the physical body lying in bed and our etheric body are indirectly connected to this elemental world, and we have the most direct connection with the higher soul world that I am talking about. We just do not have conscious awareness of it. The connection is there during sleep, when our astral body is free around us. It is also there when we are awake, though then the connection is mediated by the forces that the physical body has attracted to itself, that is, it is not a direct connection. We find beings, we call them soul beings, philosophers of the Middle Ages called them heavenly beings, in this soul world that are just as real, indeed even more real, than we are during our life between birth and death. These beings do not need to be incarnated in a physical body, nor even incarnated in an etheric body. Instead, they live in what we are accustomed to calling the astral body as their lowest corporeality. We are always in a very close connection to a great number of such pure astral beings during our life and after our death. People differ from one another in that different people have a connection to different astral beings. Thus, two people can have relationships with the same astral beings, and each of them in turn with others, but both have relationships in common with one or more astral beings. From the time that we lay aside our etheric body, after passing through the gate of death, we human beings are part of the world in which such astral beings exist. Then we are with such beings in the soul world, with our individuality, and our immediate surroundings are those beings of the soul world. Thus we are in relationship to what is contained in the elemental world in such a way that we can cause within it what elicits imaginations in the way I described. But the elemental world is then outside of us in a certain way. We could also say that it is now, in quotes, below us. We use a part of it to interact with the rest of the world. But we ourselves belong directly to the world that we have just described as the soul world. We now have contact with the beings of the soul world, and thus also those who have gone through death's gate, and after some days have laid aside their etheric body. Just as we continually receive influences from the elemental world, even if we do not notice it, so too we continually receive influences directly into our astral body from this soul world that I am now describing. Only these direct influences that we receive from the soul world can be inspirations, parenthesis, of the indirect influences via the etheric body we have already spoken, close parenthesis. Now, it will become clear to us what sort of influence the soul world has on us if I first, with a few words, touch on the way in which this influence appears to the spiritually trained, who are in a position to receive inspirations from the spiritual world. They appear to them in such a way that they can become aware of these inspirations only when they can take something into themselves from the being that wishes to inspire them, something of the characteristics, the life tendency and life direction of this being. Should the spiritually trained wish to develop a conscious relationship with the dead person, not only via the etheric body, but also in this direct way through inspiration, it is necessary for them to carry more in their soul than what can be generated through interest and sympathy. The spiritually trained must be able to transform themselves in a certain way, at least for a short time, so that they take on something of the habits, of the behavior of the being, let us say the human being, with whom they wish to communicate. They must be able to settle in so that they can say to themselves, quote, I have taken on the habits to such an extent that I could do what this person could do, feel what this person could feel, sense what this person could sense, will what this person could will, close quote. It has to do with, in quotes, could. The possibility must be there. We must be able to be more intimately together with the dead. For the spiritually trained, there are many ways, if the dead themselves allow it. We must simply be clear that those beings who are part of the world we are calling the soul world actually are in relationship to our world in a completely different way than we humans are here in the physical body. There are thus very specific conditions for interacting with these beings, and very specific conditions also exist for interacting with the dead as long as they are in the astral body, that is, as astral beings. I can draw your attention to particular examples. What we human beings develop here for our life in the physical body, through relationships to other beings, which occur directly during earthly life, holds another kind of interest for the dead. Here on earth, we develop sympathies and antipathies. Let us be very clear that the sympathies and antipathies that we develop here in the physical life are influenced by the physical body and its relationships. They are influenced by our vanity, our egotism. Let us be clear about how many relationships of a certain nature we develop to various people out of vanity and egotism, and out of other things that are based on our physical earth life here. We love some people, we hate some people. In most cases, we think very little about the reasons for our love and hate, our sympathies and antipathies. Indeed, we often avoid thinking much about these sympathies and antipathies, for the simple reason that highly unpleasant truths would usually emerge. Were we to pursue what is actually expressed within our not loving a particular person, for example, we would sometimes be compelled to attribute to ourselves so much prejudice, so much vanity, or other qualities, that we are afraid to do so. And thus we do not become clear about why we hate this or that person. But indeed, with love it is often quite similar. With love, however, interests and sympathies and antipathies develop that in truth have significance only for our earthly life. Yet it is out of all this that we act. We arrange our lives according to these interests. Now, it would be quite wrong to believe that the dead could have the same interest in what we take up on earth in the form of ephemeral interests and sympathies and antipathies that are under the influence of our physical life on earth. Truly, the dead are obliged to see these things from a very different perspective. And if we question ourselves further about how we are influenced in judging our fellow human beings by our subjective feelings and by what results from our interests, our vanity, our egotism, and so on, we may not believe that the dead would have an interest either in our relationships of this nature to other people or to every behavior that then results from such interests. But on the other hand, we also may think that the dead do not see what lives in our souls, because it really does live in our souls. The dead see it, the dead take part in it. But the dead see something else. The dead have completely different judgment than the living do. They look at human beings much differently, and that is a very particular main point. How the dead see the people who are here on earth. We had better not believe that the dead do not have an active interest in human beings. They do, because the human world is part of the whole cosmos. Our life is part of it. And just as we are also interested in the subordinate kingdoms in the physical world, so too are the dead intensely interested in the human world. They send their impulses into it. They affect the world through the living. We gave an example just a short while ago of how the dead have an effect after they have passed through death's gate. But the dead see one thing first and foremost. They see how a person is who follows impulses of hate, who hates this or that person based on purely personal intentions. The dead see this. But the dead also observe clearly, according to their way of seeing and knowing, the part Ahriman plays in influencing people to hate. The dead see Ahriman influencing people in this way. They also see how Lucifer influences people when they are vain here. That is what is significant, that the dead see the human being in connection with the Ahrimanic Luciferic world. Thus what often colors completely our human judgments is omitted for the dead. We see this or that person whom we inevitably judge one way or another. We blame them for whatever we find reprehensible about them. The dead do not immediately blame people for these things. Rather, they see how we are tempted by Ahriman and Lucifer. That perspective causes, for them, what we call a damping down of the sharply differentiated feelings we have for certain people in our physical earthly life. For the dead, it is much more a sort of general human love. But do not think that because of this the dead cannot criticize evil, that is, that they cannot recognize evil. They do see it. But they are able to trace it back to its source, to see its inner connections. But all of this that I have described to you also means that trained people can consciously come near to the dead only by really freeing themselves from personal feelings of sympathy and antipathy in relation to individual people, by not letting themselves become dependent on personal feelings of sympathy and antipathy in their soul. Just imagine that a trained clairvoyant wishes to approach someone who has died, whoever that may be, so that the deceased's inspirations can become part of the clairvoyant's consciousness. But the person living here on earth feels very particular hatred for someone else, a hate that originates from personal relationships alone. Indeed, as our hands avoid fire, so the dead avoid such a person who hates in such a way for personal reasons. The dead cannot come near, because hatred affects them like fire. In order to come into conscious relationship to the dead, we must be able to make ourselves independent from personal sympathies and antipathies as they are in our life. Thus, you will also comprehend that the whole connection of the dead to the living depends on our inclinations here in our life on earth. This is true in so far as the relationship is based on inspiration, which is always there, even if it is not noticed, and always lives in the human astral body, so that humans are always in connection with the dead in this direct way. If you have a misanthropic disposition, if you do not take an interest in and have sympathy for our world, and specifically, if you do not have open, non-judgmental interest in and sympathy for our world and our fellow humans, then the dead cannot access you as they would wish to. They cannot move into your soul in the correct manner, or if it does happen, it is made extremely difficult for them, and they are able to do it only with suffering and pain. This coexistence of the dead with the living is quite complicated indeed. But you see from this that human beings have an effect after death beyond time, including by directly inspiring living people on the physical plane. And it is absolutely true that those who live on earth at any given time are deeply dependent, specifically with respect to their inner habitual qualities, the way they think, the way they feel, what tendencies they have, on the people who died before them and who had relationships with them in life, or with whom they created some kind of connection even after death, which can occur under certain circumstances but is more difficult. A certain part of the world order and of the progress of humanity is completely based on the dead having an inspiring influence on the life of human beings on earth. Indeed, in our instincts, there really is knowledge of this influence, the knowledge that it must be so. We can see this specifically when we observe cultural practices that were widespread earlier and are now dying away because humanity continuously advances to other new forms of life in the course of its evolution. People knew earlier, when they sensed more of the actual reality of spiritual worlds, much more about the necessities that exist for life as a whole. They knew that the living need the dead, need the impulses of the dead, even in their habits. Think back to earlier times, when it was the custom for the father to ensure that the son took over his business, that the son carried on in the same way. A connecting bond was formed through the physical world because the son had followed in his father's footsteps. A relationship was created between the activity of the son and the activity of the father, and the father continued to have an effect in the son long after the father had died. This was the basis of much in life then. And now, if whole communities place great value on various tangible objects being passed on within a class or within the families of this class, it is based on the knowledge of the necessity that the life habits of those who came before must extend to the life habits of those who come later. The life habits of those who came earlier have matured to the point that they come from them only after they have gone through death's gate. Only then do they become mature. These things are ending, as you know, as the human race progresses. And one can see a time approaching in which these inheritances, these conservative conditions, will no longer play a part. The physical bonds will no longer be present in the same way they were earlier. Instead, people must take that much more from spiritual scientific knowledge of what will lift the matter into their consciousness, so that people can consciously take up the life habits and customs of earlier times that are still needed, so that life may continually advance. We are now living in a transitional time. Since the beginning of the fifth post-Atlantean period, which has brought chaos, but relationships will come again later, in which people will take up what comes before them in a much more conscious way through knowledge of spiritual scientific truths. People have already done it unconsciously, instinctively. But what is still instinctive today must be transformed into consciousness. We do not pay attention to it, but those who study history in a spiritual way could notice, if they only went into the real connections and not into the dreadful abstractions that dominate the so-called humanities today, that what is taught during an era carries the character of what goes unconsciously, instinctively, so to speak, into what the deceased sends streaming into the present. Let me read that again. We do not pay attention to it, but those who study history in a spiritual way could notice, if they only went into the real connections and not into the dreadful abstractions that dominate the so-called humanities today, that what is taught during an era carries the character of what goes unconsciously, instinctively, so to speak, into what the deceased send streaming into the present. If we know one day how to really study the great pedagogical thoughts spread by the bearers of pedagogy in an era, by the true bearers, not of those who are charlatans, then we will see that this fundamental pedagogical thinking originates from the shared transfer of the habits of those who died a while before, who send their habits streaming in. Thus, having moved into the astral world, the dead have a much more intimate coexistence with people, because what enters into the astral body reaches even further into our inner nature than what enters into the etheric body. The dead have a much more intimate coexistence with people than do etheric bodies or some elemental beings of another kind. But you can see from this that the time following human life is always determined by the preceding time, that the preceding time becomes more and more part of the time following. Strange as it may seem, we become truly mature enough only after our death to affect other people directly by having an effect on their inner nature. What we should not do in earthly life, impose our own habits on another person who is mature, I mean spiritually mature, not mature in the customary sense, is actually proper after we have passed through death's gate, and fulfills the requirements for the continued evolution of humanity. These things happen beyond all else that is contained in karma and in the laws governing incarnation. And if you ask about the secret causes of people's actions, you will find that many of them, though not all, perform those actions because certain impulses flow down from those who died 20, 30 years ago or even longer. These are the secret but real interrelations between the physical and the spiritual worlds. Something of what we carry through death's gate matures, not only for us, but also for the rest of the world. It is mature enough to affect other people only from a certain moment on, but it does become more and more mature. Now please note that I am not speaking of outer phenomena, but rather of inner, real spiritual effects. When someone remembers the habits of a deceased father or grandfather, and then describes these habits in the physical plane from memory, that is not what I mean. That is something different. I mean the inspired influences not perceptible to conventional consciousness, that assert themselves in our habits and in our most intimate nature. Much in our life is based on the fact that we see ourselves, at times, as forced to free ourselves from the well-meaning influences that come from the dead. Indeed, we secure much of our inner freedom by having to free ourselves from influences coming from one side or the other. Inner soul conflicts, which we often do not know the cause of, become clear to us when we see them in the light that comes from such knowledge. If one were to use a trivial word, one could say that the past, in quotes, rumbles. The souls of the past really rumble within us. These things are simply truths that we see through spiritual sight. But people today have a very particular relationship to these truths. That is, they are afraid of knowing the truth. It was not always so. Those who study history in a spiritual way know this. People now have a terrible fear, not a conscious one, but an unconscious fear. And this unconscious fear of the knowledge that we are part of the spiritual world, that mysterious connections exist not only between souls here in the physical world, but also between souls here and in the other world, this holds people back. That is one part of the fear that instinctively holds people back from spiritual science. They are afraid to know the truth. But they do not know that by not wanting to learn the truth, they interfere in a disturbing way with the whole evolution of the world. And thus, of course, they interfere most of all with the life that then must be lived between death and rebirth, when these connections must be understood. What lives in us becomes even more mature when it is no longer only inspiration, but when it becomes intuition, in the sense that I use the word in title How to Know Higher Worlds. But intuition can be a being only, above all only, if it has, let us say, to use a paradoxical term, a, quote, spirit body, close quote. Human beings can have intuitive effects on other beings in this sense, that is, on beings who are still embodied here in physical life, only when they have laid aside the astral body, when they themselves belong wholly to the spiritual world, that is, decades after their death. Then they can have an effect on other people through intuition too, and not just through inspiration as I have described. In this way, they first have an effect spiritually as an I, capital, that is now in the spiritual world, in the I of one who is still on earth. Before, they had worked as inspiration into the astral body, or indirectly through the etheric body, into the etheric body of earthly people. One who has been dead for decades can, as an I, have a direct effect, which, of course, can also be mediated by the other bodies at the same time. Then the person's individuality has grown to be able not just to settle into people's habits, but actually into their viewpoints. This may be an uncomfortable, quite unpleasant reality to today's prejudiced sensibility, but it is simply a reality. Our viewpoints, which originate in the I, are continuously under the influence of those who are long dead. Those who are long dead live in their views. But through this, the continuity of evolution is maintained by the spiritual world. This is a necessity. Otherwise, the thread of viewpoints would be continually broken. Forgive me for bringing in something personal at this point, but I bring this personal anecdote for purely objective reasons, because only through a concrete example can such a reality be completely understood. In fact, no one should express views as personal opinions, however honestly we come by them. Those who are quite honestly grounded in the esoteric, and who are experienced in the requirements of spiritual science, will not impose their opinions on the world. Instead, such individuals do everything not to directly impose their opinions on the world, because the opinions acquired under the influence of one's personal temperament will be able to have an effect only 30 or 40 years after one's death. They have an effect such that they enter the soul in the same way that the impulses of the Zeitgeist, the Archai, enter the soul. Their personal views have become so mature that they can really have an effect and correspond to the objective course of things. That is why it is necessary for those who are grounded in esotericism to avoid making personal proselytes or personally recruiting followers for their opinions. The general custom today, that once people acquire an opinion, they can hardly wait to make propaganda for it, could not be striven for by a true practicing spiritual scientist. And here is my personal anecdote. It is truly no accident, but rather something necessarily connected to my life, that I did not begin by writing down my own views and telling the world. Rather, I wrote title Goethe's World View, completely in the spirit and sense of Goethe's world view, in order not to present the view of a living person. Even if that living person is oneself, we could never give true legitimacy to teaching spiritual science to the extent that I am trying to do here. Rather, it is a necessity to put ourselves completely into the objective course of world evolution. So I did not write my own theory of knowledge, but rather title Goethe's theory of knowledge, a theory of knowledge implied by Goethe's worldview. From this you can see how the evolution of the human being continues in a certain way, how those things mature that human beings acquire here. This maturing is not just for a person's own life, advancing along the path of karma. It also becomes more and more mature for the world. We continue to have an effect on the world when we are mature enough, after a certain time in the spiritual world, to send imaginations into people's habits, and after a longer time, inspirations. And only after a yet longer time are we ready and mature enough to send intuitions to the most intimate part of human lives, into their views. We should by no means think here on earth that our views come out of nowhere, or that they develop anew in every era. They grow from the ground in which our soul is rooted, which is in fact identical to the influences of those long dead. Through the knowledge of such facts, I believe that human life will truly experience the enrichment it needs, according to the whole character and sense of our current time, and into the near future. Much of the old has rotted away, and the new must develop, as I have often explained. But human beings cannot enter this new era without the impulses that come to us through spiritual science. The perception of the universe and of the other beings in the universe that we acquire through spiritual science depends on our life being determined differently by spiritual science than it was before. What we are always part of, and what humanity will be called to realize as it develops further along the earth stage through the 5th, 6th, and 7th post-Atlantean periods, shall become living in us through spiritual science. These things which are connected to the enrichment and stimulation of humanity's world feeling and deepened presence in life, these ideas I wanted to convey today. This is what I wanted to inspire in your hearts as we are able to be together again after some time. I hope that we can be here together more often to talk about similar things, so that through our souls we can contribute to the evolution of humanity that is striven for by spiritual science. The end of Lecture 7.